This is a true story.
The podcast you're about to hear was recorded in Wisconsin and New York in 2017.
At the request of the survivors, the names have been changed.
Out of respect for the dead, the rest has been told exactly as it occurred. Welcome to the Better Call Fargo edition of the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the Wally Brando to my Mr. Jackpots, it's Dan.
Good morning, Scott. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Dan, and we are indeed doing this in the morning. At least it's morning with the sun's up as opposed to, you know, post-midnight the way it normally is for us, these things.
Yes.
So, this week, there was no Better Call Saul, very sad, but I think we've got more than enough to chat about with those two other kooky, crazy shows that we're talking about now, especially one of them, Jesus. But, you know, I think let's get right to it with the latest episode of Fargo. Now, the latest episode this week was titled The Law of Inevitability. It was written by Hawley, along with a pair who have worked on a few previous Fargo episodes, Matt Wolpert and Ben Nadivi. And it was directed by Mike Barker, who's directed episodes of various TV series such as The Handmaid's Tale, Outlander, and Broadchurch. And with a title that needs little in the way of definition, I'll just say that The Law of Inevitability is one of the caveats of the improbability principle. It essentially means something must happen. If you want to be more specific than that, one must list all the possible outcomes of a random event, and this law dictates that one of those outcomes must occur. Although in my own personal life, I would often try to imagine all the conceivable scenarios for how something will play out, and quite often something hadn't occurred to me is what happens. That's probably some other law, like it's Scott's Law or something. Anyway, I digress mightily. Let's get to the actual episode and see if that title makes sense this week. So we were both pretty high on last week's episode. We were pleasantly surprised that it had such a major uptick. I kind of feel, for the most part, this continued that trend. Did you feel the same way, or how'd you feel about it?
I definitely felt like it was a more higher quality episode, but I also, at the same time, saw this a lot of, this is like really like a Fargo episode, like not necessarily in a good way, just kind of like, this is the kind of thing I've seen before. Not that it's necessarily a bad thing. It depends on your criteria for what's good and what's bad. But it definitely had that more of a by the numbers, or in this case, by the wrenches kind of feel to it.
Right. I mean, there's definitely a few things that happened in this episode that were more than a little bit of an echo of stuff specific to season one. Probably nothing more so than the stuff with Yuri, the Russian henchman. You know, he's clearly a little bit zen. Kind of taking a page from Lauren Malvo's playbook there. You know, the whole intimidating the local police thing, it kind of played out kind of like Malvo and Grimley back in season one. I did think, are they going to that well again? I mean, it's one of those things, I think, like you, like, I liked the scene. I mean, I thought it was well done. But it felt like, you're kind of going to a well again there for me.
Yeah, it was really good and tense, but it was still had it like, this is very familiar, and I'm not so sure how I feel about that kind of feel to it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing when we were watching season two is, you know, despite the family connection and so on, it felt so fresh compared to the previous season. and not simply because it was a different time period. This does tend to have a lot of feeling of season one, and like you said, not necessarily in a good way. And it's not, and again, it's not like this is bad TV. It's still pretty good quality television, and some of these episodes have been magnificent, but it's still a couple steps down. And maybe that's, and that's one of the reasons. You never want a feeling of been there, done that when you're watching Fargo outside of the original inspiration from the movie, I think. So it can be troubling, I guess.
Yeah, we definitely don't want to have the feeling too, where, I mean, let's be honest, this isn't the greatest season of TV, and definitely not the greatest, best season of Fargo, but we don't want to be watching this and just be like, oh, well, you know, I could have just rewatched season one instead of watching this. And you don't want to kind of have that feeling at the end, because if they're going to keep, you know, reusing a lot of the same stuff, I mean, we may as well just fucking rewatch season one if they're not going to, you know, step out their game. And hopefully they'll do that a little bit more here, and it'll be worth the time, but I could see why, you know, somebody could be watching and just be like, oh, you know, why am I doing this again?
Right. Well, yeah, you've got that. Even though it feels like they've taken certain characters from season one and maybe spliced them into a couple characters. Like, there's no one Lester here. But for a while, it looked like Lester was, like, being divvied up between, say, like, Emmett and Ray and maybe someone else, whatever. Although I still don't think any of them really equal him, quite frankly. Because I don't think Emmett has shown himself to be out and out evil just yet. More lame and more wanting to cling to something to rationalize what's been going on around him. But, you know, we're 7 episodes in, and even his moment of almost turning on, not almost, but turning on Sy because of what Vargas had told him, and then he snaps out of it again. So I don't think he's really made it. I don't think his character has made that transition from, oh, he's a good guy to, oh, he's a bad guy after all, kind of a thing. So we're kind of lacking. And again, I think one of the issues with the season altogether has been the core of it. The Stussy brothers are far weaker than what we've seen in the previous couple seasons of the show. So we've been more interested in all the surrounding characters than we've ever been in them, I guess.
Right, I mean, it's kind of at the point, like, if you think about it, like, does the show even have a main character? I mean, is there anybody that's really standing out? Like, really standing out? Because there just isn't for me at this point. I mean, there's some that I like and some that are portrayed well, but as to, like, if there's anybody that's, you know, even at the level of, like, a Hansi from last season, there just isn't anybody really getting there for me, let alone a Lou or any of the, you know, Lester or Malvo.
Well, I guess, I mean, it's one of those interesting things with a show like this is, does one look at the quote-unquote hero as the main character, or does one look at the perpetrator, or where the events tend to be swirling around as the main character? I've never actually thought about that before, and I'd have to, and I don't know if I'm sure. I mean, I guess Molly has to, I mean, Molly to me is the main character in season one, regardless of how much of the story may be devoted to Lester and Malvo, because she's the hero. It's the hero's journey. Whenever you look at a lot of these shows, you got to think of who's the hero, where's the journey, and that's hers, which is why I have my issues with the final episode, that she's kind of taken out of it to a certain extent because of her circumstance. And Lou certainly is in season two, without a doubt. Here, you know, it's supposed to be Gloria. And when she is on screen, I think she's great. I think that one of the, again, going back to the problems of the season and including this episode, although still enjoyable, so it's an interesting line we're towing here, it kind of feels like obstacles are being put in her place in such a way that just to keep it going for the entire season. Because I feel like Gloria could solve everything within 2 episodes. And between, you know, it's mostly, you know, the asshole Chief Mo character, who, again, goes back to being super annoying in this episode and to the point where I'm not believing that character on the show. It's just, It's too much of a two-dimensional contrivance I've seen a million times over. In fact, it's a character, that actor, and I like Shea Whigham. I've seen him in a number of things, even playing this kind of part before. I mean, for anyone out there who's seen the first season of Agent Carter, this is essentially the character he is for most of that season, and then he kind of redeems himself, but he's still like the asshole in the way of the female protagonist, even though everyone watching, like, can't you see what she sees? What's wrong with you? But here, I found it rather, I found it more irritating than not. So,
Yeah, it's pretty tiresome.
but I do think there's so much else going on in this episode. I would still grade this one fairly highly compared to some of them this season. Like I said, it still had, I think I felt that it had like decent doses of like three different types of things. It had its tension, much like which was my big thing last week. I mean, certainly, even though again we've seen it before, the stuff with it's Donnie the cop at the police station slash library, and I love the fact that the police station shares a space with the local library. It's so ridiculous. I love that. But the ending that Yuri engineers the bus accident, and he's going after Nikki, and he's wearing that wolf outfit, which give him credit for this. If we're going to knock them for repeating things or echoing things from previous seasons, I haven't seen that before. And that, so I like that, and the Nikki character as a whole is something different than what I feel that we've seen in the first two seasons. And that was a scene I was really kind of like, I was hoping that she would wake up, although I kept thinking, if she's still handcuffed to Mr. Wrench there, and which I guess is what you were referring to before, and for anyone watching, we see a character we've seen who was in season one, the deaf assassin, that's who she's handcuffed to. I guess he's been in all three seasons because he's a kid in season two, right? With the
Right,
Hans.
yeah.
So, of all characters to be a link to all three seasons, it's so strange. Did you like the way that whole the bus accident, the way that they ended the episode with that? And Nikki overall, I think, was one of the major positives about this episode for me.
Yeah, I agree with what you said there. It was really nicely done, and I think it came close to coming, being a little bit too long for me, just the way they were taking their sweet time with it. But when they executed Yuri's plan or whatever, and just the way they did it was really cool.
I'm gonna remember you said that when we start talking about a certain other show, about talking about things going on too long. I'll remember that. But another thing I thought was really good about the episode, and maybe just because of the without getting too personal, just the mood I'm in or have been in, there's a lot of sad in this episode, a lot of sad poignancy, probably as much or if not more than anything else in the series since the poor little robot several weeks ago. And I think a lot of it is about the Nikki character, which I think is to me one of the things that's really, it's always, I think we've talked about it early on, she's always been one of the driving forces of the season, but I think it's fascinating that they've kind of flipped the book on her character, you know? I think she's someone we like from the get-go, but when she starts out, especially if you look at the first episode or two, she's like that manipulative hustler who's smart, but maybe not the most perceptive person. And it really came down to, especially in the first episode, she seemed more like an opportunistic user than anything else. I mean, I think she did turn out to have genuine feelings for Ray, as we see in later episodes. But it's not hard to believe why Chief Mo. It's not hard. I can agree why Chief Mo would see it that way. Why the weird thing? Why those two would be together? But now, I mean, granted, a lot of it is because of that horrible beating she had to take, and now she's being framed. She's really started. I think she's become a character we're sort of kind of been rooting for, over the last few weeks. And I think her quiet moments alone, like in the cell or in the interrogation room, in some ways spoke more volumes this episode than the more talky moments, I thought, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I hope I get I hope that I can't talk that she's just kind of sitting there like, you know, calculating some kind of revenge or escape, not escape, but more, you know, of revenge, kind of like when she was figuring out how to kill Gordon. I don't remember his name, but the guy from Halt and Catch Fire in the pilot. I just like the way that, you know, she was able to do that, and just kind of the way it kind of seemed really, you know, really strange and bizarre the way that was happening there. So I'd like to see, you know, something like that happen, but really, really, really nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to figure out a way she can possibly survive what's happening, but I guess I think it happened at the beginning of the next episode where someone else shows up or something. But that's a pretty bad trap they've got her in. I don't know if this I don't feel this season's going to have much in the way of happy endings, but then again, I don't know if technically any of the seasons have had really happy endings if I really think about it. Other than the hero, the cops, not dying, usually at least, somewhat coming up victorious, I guess, by the end. But usually that happens, but everyone else dies. So there's if they follow that if they follow that route the way that they have in previous seasons, there's a lot of people waiting to die on this show. I hope it's not Sai though. Though I fear for him. I think also with her, it's and why maybe it's also easier to root for someone like her, maybe, is I think largely because while she and Ray were, what's the phrase? Like they were clearly always up to no good, and she pushed out an air conditioner that killed a guy who was basically a bad guy himself. I've never thought that either of them were out and out evil, the way Vargas and his crew seem to be. I think they're misguided. I think they're lame quite often. I mean, everything they try, those attempted robberies and the sex tape blackmail, their schemes that seem as sure to fail as them banking their future on winning bridge tournaments, which always seem to be the most ridiculous get rich scheme I've ever heard. But it's like their comical efforts always have these really unforeseen but disastrous consequences that keep spiraling out of control. Whereas Vargas and his crew, they're just malicious and murderous thugs, even if they're well spoken about it, that they're still like really bad people. So it's always easy to root for someone if they're up against like, the worst enemy possible. So I guess that's where Nikki is now, where she wasn't really, a couple episodes ago. What did you were you like me? Did you get a little sad at that moment when Sai came home and is crying to his wife?
Yeah, that was pretty nicely done. I definitely like that character. I have no idea what they're gonna do next with all these guys, but hopefully he comes through somewhat unscathed. Probably won't, but we'll see.
Yeah, he's been an interesting character because at some points, he's kind of been like the comic relief for us because he's just, the performance and the character have been kind of pretty funny, more often than not. But he's also been witness or been dealt with in rather some horrible ways. Whether he's drinking a cup of, yes, we're gonna say it's a cup of piss, don't care, or witnessing a horrible beating. But yeah, him being so him crying and the like, what is it he says? He says. When she asks what's wrong, he says the world is wrong because it's a world that, it looks the same as it always has, but it's not his world anymore. He's looking at it, it's this world where murderers are roaming clear and open view, and he doesn't seem like there's anything he can do about it. And he's probably feeling there's no escape because, again, talk about schemes that don't seem to be well thought out. They gotta be kidding me if they think they have even had a remote chance of being able to get out of the situation by selling off the business to Gold Farm. Which again, at least they actually finally say it in this episode, is a kind of dark and nasty scheme too, because then they're putting like an innocent person in harm's way by, selling off the business to her, not realizing that it's become, a criminal enterprise and stuff. But trying to think of anything else that was really noteworthy. Going back to Emmett, he has some interesting moments in this episode, at least. He's the world's worst at covering up his own guilt, though. I mean, everything from his bizarre behavior at dinner to he basically jumps the gun on every conceivable thing when that Officer Winnie shows up at the restaurant. It's like, so talk about, I mean, if Ray and Nikki are not really all that well suited for the criminal mastermind lifestyle, neither is Emmett. Because I was like, not that I'm even, it's weird because I'm sort of, I can't, I don't know if I'm quite rooting for Emmett or not, but you know, you had that reaction like, no, just shut up. Just don't say it. What are you doing? She hasn't even said anything yet. She's a traffic cop. She didn't even know what she's doing, quite frankly, and you're just making it easy for her, you know. But I did think that was pretty funny. But I'm trying to think what else happened. Oh yeah, but then it's interesting because he feels like he's a character who's kind of he's lost right now, I think, particularly after accidentally killing his brother. So like I said earlier, I think he's just clinging or clutching to anything he can just to get almost a foothold on reality again, whether it's to rationalize what he's done or working with Vargas. That's why I think it's so easy for him to suddenly turn on Psy the way he does, because Vargas is now the guy who's cleaning things up for him as opposed to Psy, you know? So he has to try to build on this trust he now has to have in Vargas. So naturally he's going to start, you know, buying into Vargas's bullshit, even though when Psy points out it makes no sense. I think he says something like, yeah, I want to go from making millions to making thousands. That makes no sense. It's a really great scene between them actually in the car. And I guess, and we don't get that much Vargas in this episode, actually. But we do get Vargas sort of, for lack of a better way to put it, I guess he's kind of helping to console Emmett to a certain extent by telling that little story of the story his mom used to tell him when he was like, I think trying to get to some sleep or was scared or something. I can't remember the re I didn't write this down. I don't remember the reason why his mother would tell him this story. I just thought it was interesting. His mother tells him a famous old, like I guess he called it like a nursery rhyme kind of a story. That's always had very sinister overtones. So of course that's the story that Vargas's mom told him, you know.
Yeah. I enjoyed him, you know, pretty much like helping himself to like Emmett's Christmas presents or whatever.
Yeah, that was so insane. It was, I couldn't tell if that actually was happening right at the beginning of the episode, or if they did a little time displacement there, because I couldn't be sure if during the scene when they're talking to each other and they're sitting on opposite ends of those two stairways with everything with the bear and the Christmas tree in between, I couldn't tell if the presents were sitting there all open or not. I couldn't really make that out or not, but. Yeah, just putting on the tie and smelling the perfume. It's like Vargas is a little kid right now. He's opening up all the presents ahead of time and just basically quote unquote like playing with all of them. I'm like I'm looking at the looking puzzled at like the slipper, the shoe slipper thing that he I guess Emma got yet another pair of them or something. Can't think of much else beyond, you know, getting circling back to Gloria, and pretty much said a lot about her already. The fact that is that I think she would just solve everything without all this. What I guess Vargas must have another person on the payroll outside of Mimo and Yuri, because the whole DJ Qualls showing up as like some sort of assassin to kill Nikki and while she's in jail. I'm guessing he must be working for Vargas is the only thing that makes any sense there because
Yeah, don't they have, you know, one or two guys working inside that semi trailer? So maybe it's like one of them.
that could be it. Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming Vargas. I mean, I'm sure it's a vast organization. It's not just it wasn't just
Right.
you know a couple guys. It just this one just seemed out of nowhere, and maybe it's because it's DJ Qualls, so who people remember from any number of shows. He's on Right now he's on the Men in the High Castle, and he's on Z Nation, God help me. But you know, of course, a lot of us remember him from a couple episodes of Lost and a bunch of other things over the years.
Yeah, Breaking Bad. Yeah.
Right, Breaking Bad. Why would I leave Breaking Bad of all shows to leave out? But I think overall I thought this was a it was a pretty solid episode, although I do agree with what you said from the get-go, that there were some things that felt a little too familiar, and I think we just want or expect better from a show like this. That's why I think I probably put it a tick or two lower than last week, but still higher than most of the episodes of the season. You know, I still think it's going in a good direction. I just wish it could be a bit more original about it. And considering with Holly behind it, you'd think it could be, but you know,
Yeah.
I love the theory that Legion kind of tapped him out a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so to get your motor running, and yeah, that way people can hear you for a change. You want to switch over to something a bit weirder than
Yeah.
probably anything that Hawley and company have ever yet to achieve on either Fargo or Legion.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking about that, especially during the first 15 minutes of the next thing we're going to be talking about, and of course, we're going to be talking about Twin Peaks. Parts 3 and 4 were available pretty much at the same time as the first two parts, either by streaming service or Showtime On Demand. But I'm sure many, I think including you, if I'm not mistaken, were trying to be patient and save them for when they officially aired this past Sunday.
Yeah, I waited for Sunday night until when I was done with work.
So a lot of what we saw in those 2 hours was, shall we say, Cooper-centric, although which Cooper or what Cooper we're talking about is debatable. So let's attempt to talk about some of it, because some of this is going to be a little weird, and I might defer to you, or we should all defer to you quite a bit during this, because I feel like there, as I understand it, there may be certain things that were either nods or connections to Fire Walk With Me, and my memory of that is basically non-existent. I haven't seen Fire Walk With Me in probably almost 20 years now, so I can barely remember anything about it. So
Yeah.
anything that's like, you know, a touchstone for that, or definitely a link to that, I mean, that I, you know, I read a couple articles about this like almost a week ago, so I don't remember anything I even read at this point. But let's start with the Cooper stuff, and you might as well start. Let's get into what. Let's start talking about what's the hardest thing to talk about, I think, in these 2 hours. Because I kid you not, I've looked at articles about this. I read one review that pretty much just skipped it. They just didn't even mention it at all. And I went like, wait, this is episode 3 they're talking about. And I realized, I think the reviewer just did like, I'm not even gonna try. I'm not even gonna try. I thought that was hysterical. So, how about those first 15 minutes?
Well, it definitely was compelling and very, very interesting. There'd be, you know, really no way to explain what happened. I mean, you can just talk about the stuff that you've seen and the way they did it, but
Yeah.
it, you know, their way of showing Cooper escaping the Black Lodge is, you know, it's definitely David Lynch, all right.
Yeah, this is, I think those first, and I believe it is roughly 15 minutes, and even that entire first hour, but especially those first 15 minutes, that's about as overtly David Lynch as anything he's done in the last 35 years. I mean, it's extreme Lynch as far as I'm concerned. I noticed that there was like no discernible dialogue until the big floating head of Major Briggs in outer space drifts by. Yeah, and I guess he says, "Blue Rose." Is that
Yep. Yep.
Now, Blue Rose, I think, is a reference to Fire Walk With Me. I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it kind of ties into like the, you know, like, I mean, maybe it's like the name of this like overall overarching case that they're like all these agents are, you know, kind of working on that has something to do with this, you know, Bob and all these other, you know, people getting murdered shenanigans.
Right. Yeah, and the sequence overall, it's like you're saying. I mean, it's one of those things, like, I know sometimes when we've talked about shows, either be Better Call Saul or Fargo, especially more the previous season probably, or Legion a little bit. Sometimes we chat, you especially like to bring up stuff where it may be something about a specific visual look of something, or maybe the sound design. This sequence, this whole 15 minutes, whatever, the sound, especially like the sound design or the odd kind of jumpy editing that they do throughout the scene, especially around the fireplace and stuff like that. And then you start stacking up all the things. And what seems to be fairly sparse on the screen, there's a lot going on. You got the woman with the no eyes who we can't understand anything she's saying, or if she's saying anything at all, quite frankly. You got a box that's essentially floating in outer space. Then you've got that weird, I don't know what to call it, it's like a metal pipe, yeah, or drum or something that's on top of the box. And then we go back into the box. I always love the idea of when you see something which looks small on the outside, but it seems like it goes on forever when you're inside, kind of a thing. That's a common fun thing. You've got that electrical circuit board or gigantic outlet thing where the numbers keep changing on it. Because I noticed the numbers changed at least twice in that, which I thought was there. I thought that was almost Lynch just being silly as far as like, oh, so you guys like numbers, huh? Like from that Lost crap, right? Okay, I'll throw in some numbers. Sure, here's some numbers. They're not going to mean anything, but here, sure. Be funny if they actually mean something, but I don't think they will. To me, I looked at a lot of this as just, it's just emblematic of just a strange trip. And whether it be Cooper in outer space or Cooper looking in at this weird purple seascape out of nowhere, whatever. Or doesn't Ronette show up in it or something towards the end of the sequence?
Yeah, I'm not sure who that was, or if that was her, or if that was like the whoever, like, you know, didn't have the eyes and, like, you know, mouth and like before the switch got flipped, but it could have been somebody different, because, you know, that person kind of, you know, floated off into the stars, I guess.
Yeah, I think woman with no eyes who I whatever that was, I don't know. I think she tumbles off and, yeah, floats off into wherever. But I'm fairly sure the woman who's by the fireplace later on in the scene, I think that's supposed to be Ronette. I don't know that from my own knowledge, because I'm not that smart, but I think I did read that somewhere. So I think that's who that's supposed to be. Not that I recall anything that happens. Also, I also watched these like last Friday afternoon, so I'm actually struggling to remember a few things, so I might have to defer to you. You have a couple more days on me for this.
But yeah, there definitely was plenty of crazy stuff going on there. I'm guessing, you know, we'll probably never get any explanation for any of it. I don't see how it would come back in. They'll probably go on to the, you know, they'll talk more about Major Briggs, I'm sure, and what the Blue Rose stuff means. I noticed that when Cooper, like, after the switch gets flipped and he returns into that room, I noticed there was a blue rose on the, like, there was a table there in between him and the weird thing on the wall. So I noticed that, but, you know, it probably was just there for, you know.
They're being cute.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing with Lynch is there's always that trick with, you don't know half the time if something's there and it's an actual clue to something, and when it's just them being a smartass. Because they are guilty of that. They do that, yeah, absolutely. So, which is just funny because it confounds the people who love looking for like a million different clues to try to interpret or figure things out and come up with theories, whatever. And you never know. It's bad enough when you can watch something and it's like, oh, this is there for a reason, and this is there, but it's just to be, you know, kind of trippy the way like these first 15 minutes were. And then you have the third option of, oh, he's just putting it there to screw with us. You know? So I guess these 2 hours, I'd almost want to say it's the story of three Coops. So this third Cooper, Dougie Jones, and first thing I thought, maybe you did as well, I thought, oh, they're having fun with Doug Jones now, using his name. So is it safe to say that this third Cooper was somehow created by I don't know what we're calling him. I'm going to say evil Cooper. I don't know. Some people say dark Cooper or doppelganger Cooper. Now that there's two, in this episode, we're bringing a few of them. I think evil Cooper is the easiest thing to call him. Does that make sense for how that character even came to be? You know, is that how you interpreted where Dougie came from?
Yeah, and I think somebody said that too. I don't remember who in the episode said that he did that. But
could it have been Mike in the lodge or something like that?
Yeah, that sounds right. Probably right. Mike.
Well, I guess I thought maybe he was making. Then it makes sense he would be making Doug as kind of almost like a stand-in for himself. You know, when the Black Lodge came a calling for him. So we do learn. We actually learn quite a bit, you know, about this doofus named Dougie. I think that's okay to call him a bit of a doofus. Seems like he's a guy who's gotten himself in trouble with the wrong people. He's, you know, definitely in debt to somebody, and somebody who seems to be a bit more serious than some loan shark, the way they're trying to basically kill him. And it's a situation his wife clearly knows about as well. I did wonder why they're going through much trouble of tracking him down, trailing him and killing him out, you know, on the street when they pretty much should know where he lives. I mean, his house is the one with the red door. Why don't they just wait for him at home and just kill him there? I was a little confused by that, but I didn't really care too much about it. So we got a lot of puking in this episode. And I've seen my fair share of vomiting in TV and film over the years, whether it be to comical effect or just, you know, out and out disgusting. What we were subjected to in this episode was among some of the more gross vomiting I've had to sit through, especially since, and especially in one case. The one thing I'm not used to with watching vomiting in whatever medium we're talking about, I'm used to seeing it happen, you know, it jetting out of the character's mouth, projectile vomiting, whatever you want to call it. I'm not used to the camera lingering on the vomit. And I guess it's Dougie's vomit in the motel room. I was like, okay, really, David, I really don't need to see this anymore. Could you move the cat? Could you move the camera? And then what evil Cooper starts doing in the car, which just goes on and on. Like it felt like one of those Saturday Night Live sketches they used to do like 15, 20 years ago, where characters just kept puking all over each other, or a South Park sketch for that matter, where they used to do stuff like that. So I think I heard somewhere that some of the vomiting stuff was also kind of referencing Might have been like Fire Walk with Me or something. Does that ring a bell with you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if it's specific to that, but I mean, I've seen a few things where they like, you know, think it has to do with like whatever, you know, whatever kind of stuff that like the, I don't know. It's I don't know how to explain it.
Okay. See, yeah, that's probably one of the funny things about trying to talk about Lynch's stuff, especially with a lot. It actually applies to a lot of his films, quite frankly. But really, with this Twin Peaks stuff, it's one of those things where, on one hand, you go, "Oh, that's going to be an awesome thing to podcast about," because there's so many things to look at and clues and hints. And then sometimes you're left going, "I don't know, I don't know." And again, it's. I don't feel that bad about that because I tend to read things about this show to just try to see what other people are saying, and people will have a bunch of things to say intermingled with "I just don't know." I don't feel too bad that
Yeah.
we may be drawing a blank from time to time. Wow, unintentional segue. Speaking of blanks. So this whole business of when Cooper does make his way back into the real world, or whatever we call, the world we're in, whatever. But he's beyond an amnesiac, I guess. Because he hasn't just like forgotten his name. He's kind of like he's forgotten how to function entirely, how to communicate, how to even walk. So he spends the episode kind of like a spaced out toddler. That's some perf I have to say, that's really some performance by Colin McLaughlin in this episode, in both these episodes, but especially in this role. I totally bought it. It was, and it's something that should have been like, when I think about it, it should have been like driving me crazy. Like, come on, I woke, but I was fascinated by it more than anything else. So I mean, the casino sequence. Wow. Well, what did you think of that? I mean, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I really, and it looks like he's having a fun time, you know, playing this just you know completely whacked out character. Just the, you know, from the way he walks and all of it is just so, it's just so funny.
It's one of those things where I keep thinking there's going to be a blooper reel. And there's going to be people cracking up. I just know. I mean, that when he's having like the conversation with the casino boss in his office, there because that guy's actually a comedian or comic actor. I've seen him in other things. I know that they probably cracked up during that scene. I'd love to see the bloopers for it. But yeah, I think maybe one of the. I mean, I think Colin McLaughlin was always going to be on board to do a Twin Peaks thing, pretty much, if Lynch was involved, or Lynch and Frost, I guess, but. Can you imagine when you heard like, "Oh, by the way, you're not just gonna get to play just, Cooper and like, oh, evil Cooper. We're gonna give you a lot more toys to play with." When he saw the script, and he's like, "Are you kidding me? Really? Really? Holy
Yeah.
crap."
Oh, yeah, and just in these two episodes, we get to see him play like, you know, like actual Cooper, just like going through like the most bewildering crap, like in the, you know, Black Lodge area, kind of. And we get to see him like, you know, playing this, you know, this Dougie that isn't exactly all together, and you know, playing you know, kind of a more sinister evil Cooper, and then evil Cooper pretending that he's good Cooper, but still sinister as fuck. I mean, he's just all over the map this week, and it's
Right.
just, you know, but all of it's completely convincing.
And also keep in mind, he's playing both the the Dougie character who we now see as a short-lived character, I guess, and Cooper with his brain kind of erased and having to relearn everything is an entirely new character unto itself, I guess. But I could. You know what? What's funny is that I remember commenting last week about certain sequences and how long they went on for and how it was tested my patience. And there were things that tested my patience again in these 2 hours, but none of the Cooper stuff, however. Because even as long as the stuff that went on for at the casino, I could have sat through watching Mr. Jackpots win all 30 jackpots. I was just enjoying that. So, you know, it did kind of seem that way at a certain point. But, you know, if it meant we get to hear him say hello, you know, 30 times, I was cool with that. That was so much fun. Oh, by the way, as far as fun casting, and obviously we're going to talk about a little bit about that shortly. I'm, you know, as you know from other podcasts, I always love to point out things that are related to the HBO old HBO series Mr. Show. The guy who wins at the jet at the slot machine, where, you know, I don't know what to call Blank Cooper picks up the hello from. That's actually a guy from Mr. People would recognize from Mr. Show. The actor's name is John Ennis. He was on, I think, all seasons of Mr. Show. So that was kind of a cool thing to see on this one. But I think one of the really fun things with him is it's the whole fact that he doesn't know how to do anything. You know, like he doesn't know how to tie a tie. But the cup of coffee thing. Can I ask, did you think that was it possible when he was given a cup of coffee that that might break him out of the fog for a second there? That was going to be the. That's what I
They
was. Go on.
definitely made it seem like that could happen there, but they sure as hell didn't stick with it.
No. What I really liked about it, because I remember, as I said earlier, I called him like a spaced out toddler, because I think a lot of what he's doing throughout. Kind of is like that, you know. He's just learning how to walk, it seems, and the way he's re repeating words that people say to him, like, you know, the last couple words, like little kids might. Him drinking coffee for the first time is the way like a little kid would drink coffee for the first time. Like your parents are drinking coffee, it must be the thing to do. It's really cool. Then they give you a cup, and all of a sudden, it's awful. So I thought that was really great.
Yeah,
Go
I'm
on.
definitely not clear on like exactly like, how this ducky person just kind of like, was created and then like, eventually has some kind of life. I mean, I suppose it's probably, not the most important detail, but I mean, he's definitely married as a kid and all this stuff. So he's, I'm guessing he hasn't been floating around the whole 25 years, but I suppose he just kind of came out of nowhere and then just,
I was thinking about that too. I was trying to figure out how long has Dougie been in existence. See, my fear, I would theorize that once Evil Cooper was out and about, that he at some point shortly thereafter he how I don't know how he does it. You know, he's magic, I guess. Actually, I guess he is sort of. I think he would have created this additional doppelganger, so to speak, as kind of like an insurance policy, I guess, or for lack of a
Right.
better, for when the Black Lodge comes a calling, whatever. So I could see that maybe that could, because probably when he created him, he probably looked just like, you know, it's probably like another identical twin kind of a situation. But, you know, obviously Dougie's put on a little bit of weight.
Huh.
Which I really love. I love how everyone's like, oh, you've lost weight. It's like, he looks so much different, and you're just reacting loudly. Oh, whatever. Because, like, for example, I mean, yeah, maybe he's been with his wife, who's played by a David Lynch film veteran, Naomi Watts. It's possible he's been with her for any number of years, but I don't get the impression they've been together for, like, 20 something years, you know, because he's, you know, that just doesn't work. And their kid, I mean, I think that kid's probably still in single digits, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah,
Sonny,
it's around there.
Sonny Jim Jones, really? Jim Jones, really? Jim Jones. We'll get to funny names again later as well. But, so yeah, my thinking is that he just somehow came to be, you know, within the last, you know, maybe 25 years ago. How that exactly works, how he's able to set things up and start his life, that's one of those complications we just try not to think about, because
Yeah.
you start moving away from the sci-fi fantasy realm and to the into things that are practical. It's like, well, how does a guy who's like in his 30s just show up out of nowhere with no money and able to do I mean, I don't know how what Evil Cooper does to I don't know if Evil Cooper's done anything to set Dougie up, you know, on his life moving forward or not. I have no idea.
Just has to make sure he has a red door so he's easier to find by the Black Lodge.
The red door. So, Evil Cooper, who I guess after his... Wait, does the... I'm trying to remember now. The vomiting happens and then the car accident. Right?
I think that the car crashes and then he like vomits like all over the place after he rolls.
Oh, is that what? Okay, I couldn't see. Yeah. It's been a while. I couldn't remember. Because I know the whole thing is like for a minute that you think it's possible he's going to get sucked in through that little. Looks like there's apparently a portal in the car or something like that. They certainly start making us think that might happen, and then it turns out to be Dougie who gets sucked through an outlet somewhere or something. So I guess he gets taken in by the highway patrol finds or whatever. And then we finally get some other characters. We get the return of some FBI agents. So how'd you feel about seeing some faces that we remember from 25 years ago plus?
Oh, I loved it. It was pretty awesome. Good to see those guys again.
Yeah, I love seeing David Lynch back as Gordon. And Miguel Ferrer, I feel like I should say the late Miguel Ferrer, since he passed away, I think a number of months ago at this point, is Albert.
Yeah.
Basically it builds up that scene with the two of them plus the new agent, Tamara Preston, I think her name is, when they meet with the evil Cooper. That was a great scene because I was kind of in that in-between world of I'm finding it amusing, but I'm also finding it kind of disturbing as well. Especially the way Kyle MacLachlan was playing it, because it seemed like he was slowing down the way he spoke, almost like a recording kind of, that was like slightly warped. Did you notice he was doing that? It was very strange.
Yeah, I thought maybe he was like making it easier for Gordon to hear him, maybe, but I don't know.
Right. With the whole, that could be it. It also reminded me, because especially the way he repeats phrases, he kept repeating the same thing over and over about needing to be debriefed and blah, blah, blah. It reminded me, like, way back when, in the original Twin Peaks, wasn't Cooper always recording things for Diane or something?
Yeah.
In a little tape recorder? So I kept thinking that, you know, Evil Cooper is kind of like a tape recording right now, although it's, you know, and... but slightly warped and slow, and it's like it's almost repeating the same phrases, like a tape is on a loop or something. That's just crazy thinking on my part, but just it made me think of that. So after they meet with him, I'm happy to see that at least they think that there's something off. Now, do we think that either one of them may actually leap to the idea that that's not Cooper at all? I kind of think Albert might for some reason.
Yeah, he seems to have a little bit more of an idea of what's going on than Gordon.
See, I have no recollection, even from back in the original run of Twin Peaks, how attuned to the crazy stuff that anyone in the FBI other than Cooper himself was either aware of or attuned or at all. Because I don't think it was just kind of Cooper's thing, and everyone else were more grounded in normal stuff, the real world kind of stuff. Is that kind of how it went? I don't remember.
On the show itself, I mean, that was pretty much how it went. But in the movie, which takes place a little bit before the show, like both Gordon and Albert were there when Agent Philip Jeffries, the David Bowie character, just kind of like, shows up out of nowhere, having disappeared in Argentina, like working on these like Blue Rose cases. He just kind of like, just shows up at FBI headquarters in Philadelphia and then disappears again, pretty much right in front of all three of them.
So
all three of them are definitely like, realize that this kind of stuff that can happen, even though, Albert's kind of an asshole about it.
Right. That's one of the things I always loved about the Albert character, that he was an asshole, but I kind of understood him, so it worked for me.
Yeah. Anyway, it was funny. He had a couple, cheap shots there where he was just, bad mouthing about local food or something. And this week, I'm just like, oh yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. I also kind of liked, I guess it's Lynch himself saying it towards the end here, because it seems like they're echoing the viewers when they actually say, they don't know what it is or how to explain it. It's like, you're kind of like us right now. You're very, very cute. I'm trying to think of anything else that was really. Oh, I guess we should mention another returning FBI agent was Denise. We got to see the David Duchovny character again. I love seeing that character again, especially playing off of Lynch. I did feel this time she was a bit more silly or caricature than I think she was back in the early 90s.
Yeah,
So.
and they were yeah that they seem to be trying to have a lot of fun there too. I mean, just kind of like the fact that that she's saying Federal Bureau of Investigation instead of like FBI like Mulder says all the time. I mean, you could tell they're definitely winking at that kind of thing too.
Oh yeah. Oh, that stuff I loved. I think it was more the weird catty stuff seemed a bit kind of like could have. I wish she had been. I would have preferred she had been a bit more matter of fact, and the change that she had gone that you know that she's gone through was not even discussed at all. I think that would have made it actually a bit more interesting for me. So beyond all the Cooper stuff, there was a few other things that happened. But I'm trying to figure out how to speculate about what's going to happen on this show. I mean, how long do you think we're going to go with Cooper as the amnesiac, people think he's Dougie thing? I mean, do you think that's going to go on for quite some time, or do you think there's going to be something that's going to happen to snap him out sooner? I mean, it's an 18 episode season. I don't know if I want to see amnesiac Cooper for another, 12 or 13 episodes at this point.
Yeah,
That might drive me crazy. That would probably drive
yeah,
me
but
crazy.
probably a couple more, and then they'll be good with it, I think. I think they got some more stuff to do in Las Vegas with it, and figure out what's going on with some of that. Not that they, we even know something's going on, but I guess there probably is. But I would make it go on forever, but I could be wrong.
Well, I'm wondering because we see that Dougie gets erased from existence in the Black Lodge, which is like, oh, wow. That kind of makes me think that the Black Lodge was like, okay, we're not fooled here, idiot. We're still going to be looking to draw evil Cooper back in, but I wonder if it will just draw either Cooper in. As long maybe it's almost like the Speed Force needing a speedster. The Black Lodge needs a Cooper, maybe. So I guess that's kind of one of the things to be watching for here. And I'm wondering if the whole thing is waiting for them these two to converge, because I guess we are going to eventually wait for the Coopers to meet, and that could be late in the season. Again, especially with a show like this, and with and with Lynch taking such control over all of it. We really don't know what the heck they could do here. So there's any number of things that could happen. There's still a
Yeah.
bunch of characters we haven't seen yet that we know are supposed to be returning. So, there's that as well,
Right, and they're definitely. I'm guessing you have no idea like what the show is going to be about exactly. I mean, obviously, at some point, Cooper probably has to become more of his normal self. But other than that, there's some stuff kind of going on in South Dakota. And a variety of other things that I suppose could happen, but for the most part, I mean, I couldn't even come close to guessing like how they would end this thing.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how they started this thing, quite frankly. Oh yeah, and that's an interesting point actually. Other than Evil Cooper being there, they in these both episodes they don't touch on the South Dakota crime stuff at all, as far as I can recall. And the New York thing is only briefly referenced because I think we do see a photo of that couple who basically had their faces chewed off, which wow, that was a rather nightmarish photo, quite frankly. But beyond that, not really much else. It's kind of interesting how the two things that took up so much time in the first two episodes are either not referenced or barely referenced in these 2 hours,
Right. Yeah, they're definitely taking their time setting stuff up or just, moving past it once it becomes no longer relevant.
Right. Well, I'd love to say that they only spend time on things that are relevant here, but then as we shift over to the sheriff's department, hey, you know what? It was really cool to see Frank Truman there. That I really dug that. I like the fact that he's in charge. I don't mind having him instead of Harry, quite frankly, because I think I'd rather. I mean, I know you'd mentioned that Michael Ontkean, I think he's retired from acting entirely, but Robert Forster is just a much more interesting actor, quite frankly. So I'd rather spend time with him than Harry Truman.
Yeah, it would have been nice to see Harry at least, again, a little bit, but this is fine. It's kind of cool because they've kind of established the Frank character in the book that I read that came out several months ago, too.
Oh, cool.
Not that they, covered him, whatever, but, he was on the same football team as, Hank and Big Ed and Harry Truman. So, back in high school. So, there's, it kind of goes back a ways.
My God, I totally forgot all about Big Ed until you just mentioned him. Wow.
Right. We're supposed to see him at some point too, because I think he's on the cast list.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, I have to. Now, this is just maybe it's just me. I don't know. I did kind of feel we've been spending a little bit too much time with Lucy and Andy. Only because, for my taste, I think back on them way back when. I thought, they were kind of lovely, quirky. We got the little taste of them here and there. And even in the second season, I thought we got a little bit too much of them at one point, but it wasn't that much, whatever. Now, it's a bit much. I think Lucy's issues with cell phones, which have probably been around the entire 20-something years, it's a little bit out there. But I say that, but yet on the other hand, we got two really beautifully ludicrous scenes with them, which I really love. So I'm kind of trapped there. It's like I'm getting too much of them, but I did love two scenes that they're part of.
Yeah, I mean they've dumbed them down even more so than they did in the original show, which is, it's an interesting choice, I guess, to make. And I mean, I suppose it's logical that they wouldn't be getting any smarter as time went on, because they definitely didn't seem like they possessed that ability on the original TV series. But yeah, I could see how you're just like, okay, I mean, is that something I want to see for 45 straight minutes anyway?
No, I feel like they follow the tradition of like Sam Malone or Homer Simpson's, like characters who got much dumber, years later than they were when they started out. I mean, Andy especially. I mean, Andy had his issues. I think he had a sensitive stomach kind of a thing as far as seeing like crime scenes and whatever. But I don't remember him being a total idiot. The way he seems to be right now. He was a little goofy, but not an idiot. But first, you got the it's not about the bunny, maybe it is about the bunny stuff with Hawk. Which I don't know why I liked it so much, but I was enjoying the way the actor was just kept questioning it and questioning himself, like, maybe it is about the bunny. No, it's not about the bunny. We're watching it, and we're like, it would be amazing if it somehow it did turn out to be about a bunny, but there's no way it's because it's David Lynch. But there's no way. It's just why they're spending so much time with this. But I really was very entertained by that. I didn't mind that at all. It kind of makes you want, because the whole thing is that the log lady told him that something was missing. Of course, that can mean so many things. I mean, Cooper himself, quite frankly, is missing. But one assumes that's not what the log lady's referring to. Looking for something that'll link to his heritage, as he says. I can't even begin to speculate what the heck it could be. I'm still at a loss on that one. So maybe it's just something we just gotta wait and see. And it'll probably be something out of left field, no matter what, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that might tie in somewhat to like the book type stuff too, like where they might have set that up a little bit in there, because it kind of all this stuff takes place in the Pacific Northwest, and the book kind of ties it to like certain things like the Lewis and Clark expedition, which is brought up in this one of these two episodes, and some of this other stuff, like just odd happenings that have happened in that area. The like some of the original flying saucer sightings, took place in that kind of area and stuff too. So it'll kind of, ties in through that and Project Blue Book and Major Briggs and all that. So the stuff with Hawk's heritage, maybe. I mean, that could be something to do with that. But I
Huh,
don't
okay,
know.
that's interesting. Wow. See, that's why we need you here. We need the Twin Peaks expertise here. So I'm flat as I flounder. Let's just go right to the what might be the silliest thing in all the entire 2 hours. Wally Brando. Now, I almost forget that it seems like everyone in their left ball is going to show up this season on Twin Peaks. But Michael Cera. And I couldn't decide, is he doing the worst Brando ever? Or is it actually not a bad Brando? I almost want to go put on the wild one to kind of check to see. Because Brando, especially in the whole motorcycle getup, was rather, for someone who's known as being the great method actor, he did do a very over-the-top kind of laconic speaking role when he did that. And I think Sarah was kind of doing that to a certain extent. How much did you enjoy that?
Oh, I can safely say that having brought up X-Files and Arrested Development's revivals last week, that I definitely found this scene to be funnier than anything on the Arrested Development. And it was, you know, I was just laughing a lot the whole time. It wasn't, you know, it was different than like the good episode, the Darren Morgan episode of the X-Files season 10. You know, it's a different, that was a different kind of comedy filled with inside jokes, but this, it was just ridiculous. I'm just, you know, just laughing at just how just obnoxious it is. And, you know, it's still kind of, you know, it fits with like the theme of the show, because there's always, you know, bikers going around doing their thing, but just the story that he's telling and the way he's delivering it, just about all the like, just, you know, things he's been doing. It was hilarious. I really, really liked it.
And the patience that Frank Truman's able to show in that scene, because you know full well, it's like he, that's a character, because he's a very, you know, man of the earth kind of, you know, get things done kind of a guy from what I've seen in this episode and what I can remember. So the fact he has to stand there and listen to this character basically bizarrely prattle on is really something. I also love the fact he's, you know, he's doing the whole Marlon Brando, the Wild One character, yet he's doing quotes that seem like they're straight out of The Godfather as well. So he's doing he's doing all this Brando stuff all at once. You know, I'm surprised he didn't quote Superman at some point. But it was so openly ridiculous that I kind of loved it. It's a weird show that, you know, one can get frustrated by, you know, not either not understanding what things mean, or maybe if an episode feels like it's not pushing the story forward, or scenes don't seem to do that. Obviously, this is a scene I don't think that really will have any impact on the show whatsoever, as far as plot or anything else. But I don't care, because I was entertained by it. I was like, okay, this is just so goofy. I love it. You know, that this is what I expect to see, you know, many Twin Peaks episodes sprinkled with. I don't want it to be like the final episode to be like that, but an episode like this, I was fine with it. I'd rather watch this than, you know, linger on a pile of vomit. You know?
Right. Yeah, I'm not tired out by this kind of thing yet, you know, and it's a little bit better quality than some of the stuff at the end of, you know, season 2 of Twin Peaks would, where they would do something, you know, kind of just, you know, tedious and, you know, kind of like the guy walking around inside the bank, you know, it's like, okay, you know, it's funny the first, you know, time or two, but after a while, it's just like, you know, enough. So far on this show, the stuff they're doing is still, I mean, it's, I don't know, fresh isn't quite the right word, but just, you know, the weird, quirky stuff that doesn't necessarily have a meaning, I guess I'm willing to be a little bit more patient for, you know, if it's Lawrence Jacoby spray painting shovels for some reason.
Or, yeah, I was going to ask you whatever, about that. I was like, you know, what about the painting the shovels? Do you think that's going to eventually lead to something, or would it be funnier if it actually never leads to anything?
Quite frankly. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really. I mean, he's no longer a psychiatrist. He lost his license because he was, like, you know, half involved with Laura Palmer back in that thing. So he lost his license kind of, like, you know, after the show ended somewhat. But I don't know how the shovels has to, you know, figures in with anything. Maybe he's out there looking for something. I have no idea. But
on one hand, I could see it being something that really is of something of major significance. But I could totally see Lynch just making a decision like, okay, every other episode, we're going to have a longer-than-it-should-be moment with Jacoby doing something that's involving these shovels. You know, because we had that episode where he's getting the delivery, which seems to go on forever. And now this one where he's spray-painting them. And so every other episode he's going to be doing something. And it'll just lead to, like, at the end, right, he's, I don't know, created some stupid work of art with shovels, which means nothing to anything. And it's like, really? That's what that was all about? It's like, yeah, it was Jacoby's Ark. You know, that no one wanted to know about, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's kind of, one thing I think is funny is that they keep having Jacoby get all these shovels, and like back in the pilot for Twin Peaks, it ends with like Jacoby's hand like digging something up, but like not using a shovel. He's like getting like the half of one of those like heart bracelets that like James Donna Barry.
Yeah.
So it ends with Dr. Jacoby like digging, but he's not using a shovel at all. So I just thought that's kind of, you know, doubting it means anything, but you never know with these guys.
So, just getting to the point of wrapping it up with the episode. I mean, we got to see Bobby as a cop here, and his going on these crying jags when he's thinking about, you know, Laura Palmer, I guess. But Hawk, I'm just wondering, even if he finds whatever it is he's supposed to be looking for, I'm trying to think what's that supposed to lead to. I mean, I can't imagine that they're going to have Hawk find his way into the Black Lodge, although he did sort of see... Didn't he kind of see the curtains a little bit a couple episodes ago? They were kind of there and they weren't?
I mean, maybe... I'm assuming whatever he's doing like might have something to do with like however they, you know, bring Cooper back fully or unify, you know, both Coopers or whatever they end up doing in that regard. I mean, or, you know, or else it's just, you know, he's... Maybe whatever he's doing will set up whatever, like, the final act, you know, the end game is, whatever that could be at this point. It could be, you know, just have something to do with... who fucking knows?
Right. Is there anything else that comes to mind that you wanted to touch on, or did you just want to get this wrapped up?
Yeah, I think that's about it. It was you know, it was kind of nice seeing Bobby again, and the, you know, the weird Twin Peaks-esque over the top crying, I thought was you know, it was, you know, a little bit funny, but kind of sad, and you know, seeing the music or hearing the music and seeing the picture, you know, it was, you know, just kind of, you know, it felt nostalgic but not like annoying. I could see how like somebody watching it, you know, that isn't quite into it, that kind of thing would be like, okay, this is like, you know, stupid, crappy acting or something. But I mean, if they made it this far into Twin Peaks, I mean, like, and they like don't get that this kind of thing is going to happen. I mean, well, good luck with the rest of the show, buddy, because it's you know, it's not getting any more coherent than that.
Right. I mean, like we've spoken about online and whatever. I'm firmly, I mean, and I know, you know, like, you have a friend or something who's done this, and I'm sure there are a handful of other people out there who decided to attempt to dive into the series without having ever seen Twin Peaks before. I personally just don't see doing that. I don't think you get most of what's going on or can be adjusted to this. And again, it's been decades since I've watched Twin Peaks, but at least I have a very strong memory of it, because it was very resonant with me, especially the first season and first half of the second season, because I think I rewatched that a few times over the years. But I think one would be just bewildered and lost by all this otherwise. Or they'd be into it, but I think they'd be losing a lot. I mean, the Black Lodge stuff would... The Black Lodge stuff wouldn't be a quarter as interesting or as impactful if you haven't seen what happened in the first two seasons, I think.
Yeah, he asked me to try to explain, like, you know, what the Black Lodge stuff is. I'm just like, dude, I can't even come close to explaining it. I was like, well, kind of. I'm just like, no, you're just going to have to watch it. Make the time to plow through at least the first, you know, 20 episodes and the last few or something, but it's... You know, I just can't explain it.
Maybe there's a YouTube compilation that just has just only the Black Lodge scenes from the first two seasons. You can just watch that, which would...
And that'd be even more confusing.
Yeah, I know. That'd be awesome. It's like, I don't... Wait, now there's a little guy? What? Oh, boy. But, and I guess after this that they're going to... Now they're going to resume... Not resume, because they hadn't done it yet. I think from this point on, it's just going to be single episodes every week, as opposed to doubling up. Although they might double up at the end, I'm guessing. They'll probably double up.
I think they're probably doing that. And I kind of enjoy how they seem to be ending like most of the episodes with a music number in the bar like type thing going on. It just kind of it's just a different way of ending episodes, and I kind of like how they're doing it.
Yeah, and also it's also interesting to see a show where we got the rolling credits, which I can't think of any the last time I've seen a TV show that had rolling credits, quite frankly. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Just the way TV just isn't that way anymore, so you just don't see it credits done in that fashion. So it's kind of like Lynch bringing his, you know, it's movie director Lynch time, and so even that's going to have that cinematic feel. And also kudos to them for doing something which other shows have proven to be unwilling to do, except for Better Call Saul right now, actually, shockingly enough. Remember, you know how we've spoken about TV shows in the past, Lost was very guilty of this and a few others as well, where they would blow surprises by, if you're paying attention in the opening credits, you might see someone who's going to be in the cast that you didn't realize was going to be there. I love that that Twin Peaks is not doing that. Like, the opening credits are not the cast at all. They're just different people behind the scenes. They have the casting directors listed in the opening credits, quite shockingly enough, but not any of the cast. So that way you wouldn't know that Michael Cera or Naomi Watts or whoever else is going to suddenly show up in this episode or not. I love that they're doing that. So that way you can be surprised, whether it be a returning Twin Peaks person or some random actor, actress, singer. There's probably a politician somewhere in here. Who knows? I wish other shows would or could do that, but I'm glad that they're doing that for this show at least, because I don't get spoiled by anything in the beginning, because I've been leaving the credits on when I put it on just because I like hearing that music, you know. So I'm glad they don't blow anything for us at the same time.
No, the opening credits doing it the way they do it is pretty cool. And, you know, even though, you know, we've all seen the cast list at various times for the show, and, you know, I tend to prefer like kind of a, you know, relatively pure experience. I mean, it definitely helps when they don't, blast it out there at the beginning. Just like, hey, this is where this guy shows up. Because for the most part, I do kind of like forget like certain things are going to come back, and certain characters from the series are going to return. Even though I've watched it recently, you know, because you can really get absorbed in the experience between all the, you know, just insane imagery going on and all the whatever stuff going on. You can really kind of lose yourself watching this show. So, you know, by not having that kind of reminder at the beginning, I definitely think it helps to be surprised, as it were.
Yeah, and as far as that whole, I read that, I skimmed over that cast list the day it got released, who knows how many months ago, that one time. I don't remember any of it at all. You know, I just remember knowing that a couple people from the show aren't returning for whatever reason, either they've retired or they've passed away or they just, whatever the reason is. But I don't remember most of the people who are supposed to be like the surprise guest stars or anything. So, which I'm happy that I don't remember. You know, it's like, yay. So everything is like a fresh surprise for me. Okay, so let's wrap this up. If you enjoyed this podcast, you'll probably enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. You can like the page and join the conversation about shows like Twin Peaks and Fargo and Better Call Saul and so many others that we yap about there. You can also find us on iTunes by typing in the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. And finally, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. Dan and I, we are finally going to get together with a few of our All-Star Squad buddies to get around to talking about those superhero show finales that aired like a week ago. We might be able to do it tonight. I don't know. If not, it'll be next week. Who cares? You know, the shows have already aired. It doesn't matter at this point. We'll get to it when we get to it. We might even talk a little bit about a movie that got released a few weeks ago. I think we will. So I think practically everyone's seen it at this point.
Yeah, I think we have now. Yeah.
But that's for the people who are into that sort of thing. That's the podcast for y'all. Anyway, thanks for getting together this morning, Dan. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.